Welcome to the Big Presentations Podcast, where we offer encouragement and guidance to those who make big presentations in small rooms. We believe that properly focused practice and preparation result in effective communications. I'm your host, Paul Gibson. Let's get started. Today, we are helping you overcome presentation fear by equipping you with better questions. There are so many options that we're going to, well, split them into categories. But before we do that, let's talk about what we talked about in our last topic.
That last topic was when we addressed healthy humility, and we learned how it can help us breathe deeper and relax more. We learned to avoid the traps that make us look bad and can create more stress for us. There was so much practical advice in both the mini cast and the full cast. So if you want to learn more about the benefits of healthy humility and the warning signs of unhealthy self-focus, go check it out.
That you should, but don't do that yet. We got more to do in this episode, so stick around. We'll be right back.
Today, we've been talking about wise use of questions as a way to prepare for your presentations and lower your stress. To learn more, check out the book, Big Presentations in Small Rooms. You can get your copy today at Amazon. You could choose digital, print, or audiobook. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Today, we're learning to overcome fear by making effective use of questions. But I don't know, Mike, do questions make a difference? Can they help you make big presentations? And if so, which ones do you choose?
As you might guess, it starts with the big presentations mantra. Know your audience, know your message, and make the connection. That's the challenge. And questions can help, but you must be careful with the decisions you make. You should be determined to avoid bad questions.
So let's talk about asking good questions then. How can you ask effective and well-received questions? And what are the options?
Well, the types of questions we ask are determined by our audience and the situation. And that's why you've got to know those things. You need to know your audience before you start asking questions. You need to know the situation before you start asking questions. This topic brings back a memory from the mid-1990s when I was preaching at a church in El Dorado, Arkansas. That period of my life was filled with learning moments, many of which were painful and some of which were funny. And this falls under that second category. On this particular Sunday morning, I began my lesson with a question. At this church, sermons were one-way communications. Except for the occasional amen, there was no response from the audience. Now, laughter was acceptable, but that was about it. And in this tradition of churches, women did not speak during worship, like, ever. Well, most women did not speak.
There's always at least one.
There was, however. Right, yes. There was, however, one of my favorite people. Her name was Grace, and she did not fall into the category of most women. She was in her mid to late 70s and was totally comfortable being herself and making herself at home. So when I began my lesson with a question, Grace, being Grace, did not hesitate to shout out an answer. It was a little surprising, but I was able to carry on. And here I must pause and say that I was way too reliant on my script. If I had not been so tied to my script, I would have been thinking more and realizing that I probably should not ask the next question that was in my notes.
You would have thought you would have learned.
I did. Mm-hmm. You'd think, mm-hmm. Yes. But I asked that next question and received another hearty reply. It was funny. And the audience, who was full of grace, laughed delightedly at her responses. They didn't judge. They laughed with joy. I didn't say what the questions were. You want to hear the questions and the answers?
I got to admit, I was kind of feeling like you left out like an extra set of punchline there.
So the first question was something like, if you were to describe Jesus with one word, what would that word be?
Good question.
He's sweet.
All right.
The answer from the from Grace.
And of course, she didn't think anything about the fact that she was the only one who answered this one out loud.
Right. And then I keep going because my second question a little bit later was, if you were to use one word to describe yourself, what would that word be? Uh-huh. I'm hungry. Oh, my goodness. Oh. And I still laugh, but also get nervous sweat at the same time, just remembering that.
Well, that is a heartwarming story. I love that. I feel like I've heard it before, but it's been so long I completely forgotten the answer. So I love that a whole lot. But it's a story of questions being asked, well, to the wrong audience because you had a Grace. And it turned out okay. But of course, quite often, inappropriate questions don't turn out okay. They could offend people or confuse them or distract them altogether. But it's not a helpful thing for you when that happens.
Remember, know your audience, know your message, make the connection. It's all about connecting the audience to your message. So going back to my experience in El Dorado, even though it was funny and heartwarming, it was so distracting. And people did not walk away from that message remembering the content of my sermon. They remembered the graceful interaction with Grace, which in hindsight was probably better. You know, the experience itself was a powerful lesson in the importance of being kind and having a sense of humor, even when it might break tradition. But that was not my intended message. And that's kind of the point. The questions ended up distracting from my message.
Oh, that's true. So in your presentations, it's important to tailor the questions to the audience, to thoughtfully consider which questions will best connect the audience to the message. And it is important to ask questions while realizing you might get an answer, even when you don't expect one. And your question should not create the perception of manipulation or condescension. That's never good. Questions are open doors, or at least they should be. So if you open that door, be prepared for whatever may walk through it. You may think it's opening a door for you to walk through, but remember, that opening provides access both ways, so be prepared for that.
Ooh, I like that. That's good advice. All right, so let's dig a little deeper by addressing, well, today we only have time to really talk about three, so we'll talk about three types of questions to consider: rhetorical questions, closed-ended questions, and open-ended questions.
Okay, so let's tackle the rhetorical questions first.
Okay. The questions that I used in my lesson were rhetorical questions. They function more like a statement. No answer is expected. And if there is an answer, it's going to get a lot of attention because it's breaking the social rules attached to a rhetorical question.
Right. Or at the very least, you didn't expect somebody to answer them out loud. Maybe in their head.
Right.
But
yeah,
not out loud. Yeah. Yeah. Right, and of course, here in America, in English speaking culture, most people notice a rhetorical question and they play by the rules that are kind of attached to it. So if you are presenting in a setting that includes multiple cultures, there may be people who are in your audience who don't know those rules surrounding a rhetorical question. They may feel actually kind of like a responsibility to answer that question, or they may be like Grace and simply just feel like answering the question anyway. So either way, that's going to put you in a weird position.
Yeah, yeah. So you need to be prepared for the possibility of an audience member answering a rhetorical question. Now, this might mean you want to avoid using those questions. That's okay. That's an option. Rhetorical questions can be powerful, but man, you got to use them wisely. And you need to use them with the knowledge that they just might receive an answer. So some examples of rhetorical questions might include something like, what do we got to lose?
Right.
Or what are we waiting for? Or why do we keep doing this? So remember, there's not the expectation of a reply, but you know, that's no guarantee.
Yes. You never know when there might be a Grace in the middle of that deck of cards, you know?
That's right. Could your organization benefit from a big presentations training? I tell you what, it has been such a good past few weeks as people have been contacting me wanting to book more trainings. They were in a training and then want to book more for their teams. I just love that. So if you have internal meetings that include updates and proposals, this is for you. If you do sales presentations in small rooms, we can help with that too. Go to mrgpresentations.com to book your training today. That's mrgpresentations.com.
So the second type of common question is the closed-ended question.
Right. This is a question that can be answered quickly and definitively, often with a single word. Some people think of this as being a yes or no question. Now, closed-ended questions are often used for accountability or to directly guide a train of thought. So, for example, an authority figure may ask a subordinate, "Did you complete the task?" That's a closed-ended question.
One concern with closed-ended questions is they can come across as overly forceful or manipulative. They don't allow for explanations, caveats, or concerns. A closed question opens a door for a moment, then shuts it really quickly after a response. If you've watched any courtroom show, and a lawyer is being a jerk, they're usually asking this type of question. It's like, "Well, were you there?" "Yes, but no further questions, Your Honor." It's like, no. It's like you don't want to hear that I was there delivering a pizza? Nope. Don't care. It puts you there, and that's enough. You know, it leaves no room for anything extra. No explanation. No context. It's just a yes or no question that gets you to a place where you want, and then you bail. So think of that. The next time you think about a closed-ended question, just that lawyer question.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I remember when our kids were young, during the hot days of summer in Fort Worth, Texas, they'd be in and out of the house playing with their friends. And I lost count of the number of times I said, "In or out," and shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, closed questions are kind of like that. You know, yes or no, and shut the door. Give me a quick response, and let's move on. Now, once again, sometimes that's needed.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you need to know where somebody was or what time it was, or you need a fact, or you need them to recognize a truth
right. That
can be acknowledged very quickly with a short answer, and then you need to move on. But once again, you need to be careful with it, you know, or you end up sounding like a jerk lawyer.
That's right. That's right.
You got to be careful with it.
Yeah, you don't want to be a jerk lawyer. So the third type of question, if I'm remembering correctly, is the open-ended question, which kind of makes sense because it's juxtaposed to, you know, the closed-ended question, but it's right. The open-ended question.
And if we go back to those hot days of summer, the open-ended questions are more like the way we would use a screen door during fall or spring, when we can throw open the windows, the doors are open, the screen door keeps the bugs out, but people are welcome to just come and go as they please. It's more of an open invitation.
So while a closed question shuts off discussion, an open question invites it.
Yeah.
So instead of asking, "Did you complete the task?" which is a very closed question, especially when you say it like that, an open approach would ask something like, "How did it go when you worked on that task?" Or, "What was the process of achieving the goal? What problems came up as you worked on this task? And how did you overcome those problems?"
Ooh, I like those. Mm-hmm. And during a presentation, an open-ended question might be something like, "What do you see as the pros and cons of this approach? What are your biggest concerns with this idea? What parts of the idea are most exciting to you? And what do you think? You got any questions?" Now, these open questions invite discussion and create more information that can then guide not just the remainder of your presentation, but also the decision that comes about because of your presentation.
Yeah. So we have these categories to work with, where each type calls for a different response. It's like each category, has its own rules.
When we talked about rhetorical questions, we acknowledge the unwritten rules regarding those questions. The same is true of closed-ended questions and open-ended questions. Most audience members will understand the rules and play by those rules. Most, but not all.
There will, however, be people who do not understand those rules or don't respect the rules. So you may have people who treat closed questions as if they were an open question and give you a really long, drawn-out answer. And then you also have other people who will treat an open question as if it were a closed question and give you a yes or no answer where you really didn't want that. Use wisdom when responding to these situations. If you become flustered or worse, frustrated, it will create the perception that you're not able to deal with conflict or deal with unexpected responses.
So think ahead. Consider your audience. What might happen? What inappropriate responses could be given and how can you best respond when those things happened? You see, look at that. I just asked a series of open-ended questions to help guide your preparation for those situations.
And since there are at least three types of questions, you've got options. You also have options regarding where to place those questions. So here are two basic ones for you.
Ooh, okay, I like this. Questions can capture attention at the beginning of a presentation, so you know your audience, and this knowledge helps you compose a captivating question. You might be able to ask a question that invites them to think about an issue from a different perspective.
Or to consider an option that was previously unknown to them. You might be able to ask a question about a statistic or a fact that would apply to them, but it's probably unknown to them. Be sure that these questions connect your audience to your message. Let's think back to how this podcast started. Do you see how the questions were used to create interest? Do questions make a difference? Can they help you make a big presentation? And if so, how do you choose which ones to use?
Nice, right at the beginning.
That's
very good.
That's right. It sets it up nicely, doesn't it?
It does. You did such a good job of that. Mm-hmm. So another location is at the end of a presentation. Questions can invite action or further discussion at the end of a presentation. You could use a simple closed-ended question like, "We ready to do this?" Or, "When do you want to begin?" Those questions invite action.
You could also use open-ended questions, but be careful if you're asking open-ended questions at the end of a presentation. It is important that you have time to answer those questions. If your presentation was supposed to last 5 minutes, but you only have 30 seconds left, asking open-ended questions is probably not a good idea. Instead, you should state your openness to further discussion. These conversations would happen after your presentation, either right after the meeting or at a scheduled time to follow. But be sure that your questions don't infringe on the time of other presenters or on the time of the meeting itself. As we've always said, it's much better to end early than to end late. And trust me, this applies all the time.
Good advice. Good thinking.
So, what do you think? Can you use questions in your presentation? What things do you need to keep in mind as you use them?
Ooh, I see what you did there. All three types of questions used at the end of the presentation to guide thinking and build investment. Whew, that's impressive.
You may call me Master Splinter. I have a quick study at this. I got it.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And you, audience, you can do this too. You can use questions, and you can do so in ways that prove that you know your audience, you know your message, and you're determined to make the connection. So use questions wisely. Be thinking about the best questions you can use. When you plan in that way, it reduces your stress because you're going in with a well-thought-out set of questions that have been purposefully crafted to meet the needs of this situation. Do that, you'll be well on your way to making big presentations in small rooms.
Have you been able to use some of the things that we talked about on the show? Well, let us know about it. Give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what information you found the most useful and made your presentation better.